Welcome to another episode of Spanish History 101, brought to you by Brian Spain the Main. We have now reached a very important moment in Spain's long and complex existence, the Peninsular War, or the Spanish War of Independence, fought from 1807, until 1814. Some consider the two names to refer to the same war, while others see it as two wars blended into one. For the most part, it's actually the latter. To a certain degree, there is a reason for this. The war began with the French and Spanish forces attacking Portugal in 1807, but just a few months later, the Spanish themselves began to rise up against the French, who were now occupying their land, and joined the British and Portuguese effort to get them out. Now, this is what happened. Portugal had defied Napoleon's demand to cut off all trade with Great Britain. To do so, it needed to cut through Spain. Spain's most influential minister and the Queen's lover, Manuel Godoy, was the one who made it all happen. In addition to agreeing to let Napoleon's columns cross the country, he hoped to personally benefit from the agreement and get a chunk of Portugal for him and his family to rule over. That never happened, but it was part of the plan. This was known as the Treaty of Fontainebleau in late 1807. Now, all along, it was France's intention to occupy Spain, whether it liked it or not. The King of Spain at the time, Carlos IV, was a weak ruler. His minister Godoy, who was, as we said, romantically involved with his wife, Maria Luisa of Bourbon, was trying to run the show, run the country, but basically he was running it into the ground. As a result, a chaotic situation arose in the palace. Carlos's son, Fernando, tried to take over and was stopped in late 1807 in the residence outside of Madrid called El Escorial. But he failed initially. A few months later, a new crisis in Madrid led to another confrontation, this time in the Palace of Aranjuez, which is about an hour south, no less than that, of Madrid. And this time, Fernando managed to get Carlos to abdicate. And Godoy also resigned as Minister of Spain, or Prime Minister. When Napoleon saw this, he was not happy. He didn't like the way things were shaping up in Spain. There was sort of a power vacuum. Things were not under control, so he decided to get involved. He called the royal family up to France, to the south of France, to a place called Bayonne, where he got Fernando to abdicate in favor of his father, Carlos. But then he got Carlos to abdicate in favor of Napoleon's brother, Joseph, who would become Joseph I of Spain, or José I of Spain. This was basically nepotism at its worst, and it was something that raised eyebrows back home. For the most part, Joseph was not popular at all in Spain from the very beginning. They called him Pepe Botella, or Pepe Bottle, since they considered him to be an alcoholic, although it is believed to be a highly exaggerated bit of propaganda against him. On the other hand, there was a smaller percentage of the population that was in favor of the French. They were known in Spanish as the Afrancesados. They tended to be more liberal in their thinking, and they saw the French Republic as sort of a model for the future of Spain, since they saw Spain as a backwards country. Now, to a degree, this was probably true, but the fact that the French had invaded the country and were occupying it without the consent of most of the population, the majority of Spaniards supported the war cause. Anyway, all of this was taking place in May of 1808, But by that time, the Spaniards had already begun to rebel against the French in the famous Madrid uprisings on the 2nd and 3rd of May, mainly. The war had begun, and it lasted 6 years. It was a long and active war. There were scores of military engagements. Most of them were won by the French, but they were unable to subject their enemies, and the conflict ended up draining Napoleon of his human and material resources. It would turn out to be France's Vietnam, so to speak. Napoleon himself would refer to the war as his personal ulcer. To the surprise of many, Spain scored a major victory early on at the Battle of Bailen in July of 1808, and it was said to be the first loss inflicted on the crack French forces, the famous Grande Armée, in a traditional open field battle. It was a major upset. Something like 17,000 soldiers from the French army actually surrendered. The French general, Dupont, when he was handing his sword to Castaños as a symbolic gesture of surrender, exclaimed, "You may well be proud of this day. It is remarkable because I have never lost a pitched battle until now, and I have been in more than 20. And the Spaniard, Castaños, adding insult to injury, replied that it was even more remarkable considering that he had never been in a battle before in his life. This loss at Bailen was a glorious victory for the Spanish. In fact, the street which runs by the Royal Palace in Madrid still bears its name, but it was a colossal embarrassment for the French. It was so bad that Napoleon himself decided that it was time for him to take the reins and quash the rebellion. So he entered Spain with another humongous force of at least 100,000 troops. I think it was a lot more than that. And he tried to bring things under control. Now, despite the surprise victory at Bailen, for the most part, the Spanish didn't have the numbers, discipline, experience, or equipment to take on the French in a standard open field battle or an open field warfare strategy overall. So they resorted to what is known as guerrilla warfare. And in fact, this term was used for the first time during this war. Guerrilla, spelled G-U-E-R-R-I-L-L-A, literally means little war. Napoleon arrived in November of 1808 and was in Spain for several months and was very successful, I might add, as you'd expect. And he retook the capital of Madrid and things were pretty much under control. So he returned to France in January of 1809, thinking that things would settle down the way they had done in other countries. But the Spaniards had a different plan in mind. In addition to that, the Spanish could count on the support of the Portuguese and, of course, the British, who were often led by none other than Arthur Wellesley, who would become the Duke of Wellington. This allied effort would prove very important and too much for the French. So in brief, after some initial success, the French met stiff resistance. It became a war of ebbs and flows, going back and forth. Sometimes the Allies advanced, and then at times they had to retreat. In fact, at one point, the British were even forced to evacuate in Coruña, in the northwest of Spain, a retreat not unlike the Dunkirk episode of World War II. But they would return. So those years between 1808 and 1812, it was a kind of stalemate, and certainly the best years for the French forces, but they were unable to win the war. In 1812, Napoleon would invade Russia, and that would further complicate his chances of controlling Spain. Both conflicts, in fact, would precipitate his fall. This war was a war that was fought in three different countries, almost initially in Portugal and then mainly in Spain. And in the end, there were a number of battles that took place in the south of France. Major battles included Ocaña, Salamanca, and Vitoria, but there were many, many more. In 1814, when Napoleon abdicated and the French in Barcelona surrendered, hostilities came to an end. This was a war with a number of firsts. It was the first time the word guerrilla warfare was used, as we have already mentioned. It was also, as we've mentioned, the first time Napoleon's troops lost a major battle on an open field. It was the first time we saw Napoleon prove as someone who was not invincible. It was also the first time we saw the Duke of Wellington in action. And then we also had the first and only city to resist a siege by Napoleonic troops, and that was Cadiz in the south of Spain. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. Why did Napoleon lose? There were probably a number of reasons, many of which were typical in these situations, and they're still typical. For example, it's said that Napoleon underestimated the terrain of Spain. It's much more mountainous than many realize, and many areas are more barren and empty, making it difficult for troops to live off the land. Infrastructure back then was poor, so movement was slower than usual. The climate was also harsh. It's horrifically hot in the summertime, and also quite surprisingly cold in the winter. He also underestimated the Spanish's resolve to defend its country against a superior enemy. This is sometimes considered to be Spain's first national war, its first patriotic war that brought the different regions together. There is some debate as to how true this claim is, but there is a sense of greater unity than at any other time before. The French also failed to realize how popular the King Fernando VII would be. Napoleon figured more people would be happy to get rid of the Bourbon rulers, but Fernando became known as the Desired One, a cognomen that the Spanish would soon learn to regret. And then obviously you had the British and Portuguese support, which proved crucial, especially thanks to the able command of the Duke of Wellington. It was also during this war that another feat was achieved, one that is sometimes overlooked by foreign descriptions of the war. The Spanish government didn't completely collapse under the weight of the French. It managed to move to the southern city of Cadiz, which I was telling you about, Spain's oldest city, by the way, and managed to survive a 31-month-long siege. It was the only city in Europe to resist a Napoleonic siege. During this period, the noblemen drafted a new constitution and passed it on March 19th, 1812. March 19th is the feast of Saint Joseph, or José in Spanish. Because of this, it received the name La Pepa. Pepe, P-E-P-E, is a nickname for José, and the female equivalent is Pepa. So sometimes when they talk about this constitution, they affectionately call it La Pepa. This constitution was extremely forward-thinking for its day, and it was one of the most liberal constitutions to date. It affirmed national sovereignty. It advocated the separation of powers, freedom of press, freedom of enterprise. It abolished special privileges known as fueros and established a constitutional monarchy with a parliamentary system. It was one of the first constitutions that allowed universal male suffrage, with some exceptions, and it also extended political rights for representation to Spanish America and the Philippines, known as the Indies. And it was a significant step for the demands of American-born Spaniards. That demand should sound familiar to Americans who were former members of the English colonies. And while the Roman Catholic church was declared the official religion of that country, they did get rid, finally, they finally got rid of the infamous Inquisition. 2 years later, when Fernando VII took the throne again, he abolished, or he almost immediately abolished the constitution in favor of an absolute monarchy. Now, you know why he wasn't as desired as people were thinking, but this constitution would return several more times over the next few decades, as well as establish a basis for many other constitutions around Europe and in the Americas. Now, speaking of the Americas, another consequence of this war was the acceleration of the independence movements in Spain's Latin American territories. Soon enough, countries like Argentina, Bolivia, Peru, and Mexico would break away. All Spain could do was, aside from a few weak attempts to prevent the inevitable, was basically look on helplessly. An empire which, just a few years before that, was the biggest in the world and was as big as it would ever get, all but dissolved in a matter of 10 years. The French occupation during those 6 years devastated many parts of Spain's heritage. When you visit many cities and towns and villages in this country, it is so common. Maybe you go to a church or you go to a palace, and there'll be some comment about what happened when the French came in. They sacked the place, they looted, they took things with them, they destroyed many places. So the Spanish, when they look at their heritage, the great heritage that they have, they often blame the French during this period for destroying many things that would have been nice to see today, but have been lost forever. Some of these things may be true, others may be legend. It's hard to verify every one, but it certainly left an important footprint on the collective memory of this country. And that will be all for this episode of Spanish History 101. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please leave us any questions or comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos, or you can check us out on our YouTube channel and subscribe. Or if you wish to support Brian's Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.